Is this thing on? Word.
This is the Rookie Sports Report, hosted by Matthew Frizzell.
4 runs off the Detroit Tigers, who are the 10th worst in all of baseball.
And Logan Weber.
But this man was swallowed whole by a whale.
Presented by 96.9, 99.9, and AM 1060, ESPN, The Jock.
Everybody love everybody! Come on!
I try to love everybody, and most of the times I fail, but my knees, they don't love me anymore. We are now separated, and not physically, but we're separated now from my mind to my knee pain. I can't run anymore. Well, I shouldn't say anymore. I can't run now. This isn't chronic, not yet at least, but anyway, that's besides the point. Welcome back, actually, to the Rookie Sports Report podcast here. We're, of course, presented by ESPN The Jock, and yeah, like I was talking about just seconds ago, I've now got this condition that would probably win me a Scrabble game if I ever use this word. I now have... I'm not even going to bother. I'm going to let Google Translate say, because I can't say without muddling... Exactly. Without muttering over my own words, but this is what I have.
Chondromalacia patelli.
Thank you, Google Translate. Chondromalacia patelli. Sounds like an Italian dish, but it's not. It dishes out pain. It dishes out pain to my knees, but I looked it up afterwards, after I did my workout in which I ran the elliptical for over 90 minutes, did 9 miles in the process. You know, I do all these things, like where I run, I sprint, I do like long distance, I think. Man, why do my knees hurt? Probably
yeah,
why.
That's tough. Yeah, it's according to the Cleveland Clinic, it's the softening and breakdown of the tissue or cartilage on the underside of the kneecap. Yep. Pain results when the knee and the thigh bone rub together. Yeah, that's tough.
Yeah, it sucks. And I noticed it yesterday. I usually work out twice a day, and Mondays and Wednesdays I do legs for my second workout. First workout consisted of playing like 7-8 pickup basketball games. By the way, hit a game winner in the last basketball game.
Butter.
Started off like, it's funny. I start off like 0 for 5, 0 for 6, and then finish 4 for 4. It's just, you know, shooters keep shooting no matter how cold you are. But anyway, you shoot yourself out of a slump. But regardless, I went back to the community center that afternoon and did my usual warm-up, sprinted a track around the lap to get my pulse up, then started doing leg press, and my knees just... I finished my sets. I finished the 20 set. Then I went over to the leg lift where you put like a weighted pad like on the top of your ankle, like on the top of your foot, and you lift up with your thighs, whatever. My knees could not move. My legs could not move. I felt so embarrassed. I even lowered the weight. I was doing like 145. Then I started doing like 125, and my legs just said, or my knees just said, not today. You're not that guy today, pal. You're not... We're not doing this. So I just shrugged my head, and then I tried to run another lap, but like same thing. I had to stop because my knees were just too sore. So I just had to work on the abs and just, you know, did the abdominal, did some ab crunches, some planks, you know, got some kind of workout in, but I went home kind of discouraged. And thankfully today's arm day, so I can kind of distract myself from it. But see, here's the thing. There's so much of my workout consists of cardio and running because I found this out. If you do high-intensity cardio, say like you do, just say 3 sets of 20 on one machine, then sprint a lap, that'll get your heart rate up to where it stays up throughout that workout, and it stays at a steady high level throughout your day.
Mm.
But I can't do that now because I can't sprint, because my knees hurt, because I have, you know, like what Google Translate says.
Chondromalacia patelli.
Chondromalacia. Yeah, why was that drawn out? Jeez. Anyway. But that's beside the point. This is a sports show, not a anatomy show or autonomy show or whatever right term is for that. This is a sports show, a sports podcast. And last night on Monday Night Football, had the Bears and the Steelers, another premium primetime game between two teams with sub records. I believe the Pittsburgh Steelers still have a decent record, and the Bears are, well, the Bears. And game was played in Pittsburgh, Ben Roethlisberger versus Justin Fields. The old age versus the new age, you could say, and the old man, Father Time himself, the Pittsburgh Steelers, won that game 29-27. Steelers improved to 5-3. Bears fall to 3-6. Bears are a joke. I mean, I feel bad for two people there.
Yeah.
Allen Robinson, their star wide receiver for a long time, and Justin Fields.
Okay. I was about to say, to say that the Bears were a joke, yeah, you'd look at the record and say, yeah, a little bit. But Justin Fields, I mean, he's proven himself as one of the higher-tiered quarterbacks in this rookie draft class, at least in the time that he's been playing.
Right.
I was a big fan of Justin Fields coming out of college. I didn't like that he fell. I didn't like the idea of Trey Lance or Zach Wilson, guys like that being drafted ahead of him. I didn't agree with those decisions at all. He was 17 of 29 last night, 291, a touchdown and a pick. He also had 45 yards rushing on the game. Also, the Bears actually ran the ball particularly well yesterday. 26 carries for 136 yards. That comes out to about 5.2 yards per carry, which, you know, you look at 4 yards a carry is exactly what is the standard.
Sure.
Right? That's the benchmark for what you're looking for out of a good running attack is 4 yards a carry. And that's what the Bears got. But the defense just didn't do enough to contain Ben Roethlisberger, I guess. I mean, Big Ben didn't throw for a ton of yards, only 205, but completed over 67% of his passes, had 2 touchdowns, no picks. Najee Harris didn't run the ball well, I guess you could say. He had 22 carries for 62 yards, but he did have a touchdown rushing, you know. Excuse me.
You're still under the weather, aren't you?
It's just a weird thing I'm undergoing right now. It's just like a throat issue. Like, I don't feel terrible. I just, you know, I'm sort of coughy and wheezy, and I don't know. It's just sort of a strange thing. But the Steelers did a great job of getting themselves in position to score points. You put up 3 touchdowns, and you put Chris Boswell in a position to make 3 field goals, including a 54-yarder, which was super impressive. Cairo Santos, as Chiefs fans are well aware of that name, went 2 for 3 last night. So, you know, you look at that and you think if he doesn't miss that field goal, then they win the game. But that's a, you know, one play among hundreds sort of situation. But the Bears have been playing much better over the last couple of weeks since the move to Justin Fields, aside from, you know, his first start in Chicago when they were just absolutely manhandled by the Bucs. I mean, that game against the Bucs, they had like 60 yards of total offense or something.
Yeah, it wasn't good. Was not pretty for the Chicago Bears.
Something
Chicago,
absurd. In Chicago. Brady, yeah, and Brady went over 600 career passing touchdowns.
I'm sure those very, very thoughtful Chicago fans took that very, very well in stride.
Yeah, it was, maybe it wasn't the Bucs. I can't remember what game it was.
It probably was against the Bucs.
Something. They had like 65 yards of total offense. Like it was not good to watch. But in terms of NFL, I want to change gears a little bit. Oh my God, what the hell is going on with the Raiders, dude? Like, what are we doing? Like, how can things continue? Like, as soon as you think things can't get any worse, they get worse. The thing happens with John Gruden, right? And that situation there and the things that he sent via email, which were just disgusting, and rightfully so, he got fired. And then the Henry Ruggs situation and what happened there, and rightfully so, he got cut. And now...
Cut? He got arrested.
Yeah, he got cut and arrested. Now, Damon Arnett, who was the other first-round pick in 2020 from the Raiders, he now gets cut after a video surfaced of him making death threats to specific people while brandishing a gun. He was a first-round pick last season in 2020, and he was actually arrested, and he's facing lawsuits in Las Vegas after a car accident last October. And now this situation comes about, and now he's gone. And it is just, like, I don't understand what is happening with this, right? I mean, this is the 2020 Raiders draft class. I just want to go through this, okay? First round pick, Henry Ruggs. Currently, you know, facing time in prison, cut from the team. Damon Arnett, cut. the Raiders' third-round pick, Lynn Bowden, who was traded and never played a snap for the Raiders. Third-round pick, Brian Edwards, who was the starting wide receiver for this Raiders team. Third-round pick, Tanner Muse, cut, did not play a snap for the Raiders. Fourth-round pick, John Simpson, backup. And fourth-round pick, Amik Robertson, who is also, he's not even a backup, he's a bench player. Like, those are seven guys, or six guys, that you drafted in last year's class. Only three of them are on your roster now, and only one of them plays. I mean, yikes. Absolutely, and the top two guys you drafted aren't on your team anymore. One of them killed a person and is now facing time in prison.
You know the max he could only get is 25 years?
Right. I mean, yeah, you say like the max he could get is only 25 years. 25 years is a long time.
Yeah, but still, he's a murderer. He made a stupid decision that cost the life of someone else.
I agree with you wholeheartedly. Like, and I think 25 years is an applicable amount of time. I mean, life in prison is only 30.
Is that right?
Something like that, or 40.
So usually
life in prison isn't like life in prison. It's a specific set of time.
I know like in one area or in one state, it's like 0 to 99 years or whatever. In one state, I remember this specifically, North Dakota, it says 0 to life in prison. Like it doesn't say the years or
yeah,
whatever.
Now,
what
life
have
in the minimum for a person in life for life in prison is 15 years with a chance of parole. So it's not a thing where, like, you know, he's got life in prison at 20 years old and he's going to spend every day until the day he dies. Now, some states, some places, that is the law.
So looking at it here, and like I said, and this is the case for Nevada, or Nevada, however the hell you call it.
Nevada.
Nevada, yep. 2 to 25 years. So, like I said, and here's the one that I love seeing this, down in Oklahoma, not far from where we are. You could get drunk, get under the influence, go get in a car wreck, kill someone, literally kill someone that had nothing to do with you making a dumbass decision, and you can get a maximum of 365 days.
Zero of one to year. 1 year.
Zero.
Wow.
You can get less than that. You cannot be charged. You could get 0 years for being intoxicated, killing someone, and you can get 0 to 1 year.
Some of these states are weird.
Yeah, and
Kansas is 0 to 172 months. North Carolina is 15 to 480 months. Washington is 31 to 177
months. Yeah, some of them do months, and then you got Alaska up here in the top left that is kind of like the death sentence, 1 to 99 years.
That, yeah, 99 know, years. That's
and that's up for the judge's discretion. But I mean, like, looking at these states, this is sad. Delaware, you can go 1 for 5. Hawaii, 0 to 10. Or 0 to 10. 0 to 10. Idaho, 0 to 15. Kentucky, 0 to 10. Maryland, 0 to 5. Minnesota, 0 to 10. Here in Missouri, 0 to 15. That's pretty pathetic. Utah, 0 to 15. Wyoming, 0 to 20. Virginia, 1 to 20. Like I said, Utah. Oregon, 0 to 20. Ohio, 1 to 15. I can't get over Oklahoma, dude. Oh.
Wow.
Yeah.
That's crazy.
And like, I'm joking about this, but I saw this a week or so ago while we were talking about this rug situation as it was unfolding, and I looked up, okay, what can be the maximum charge for DUI resulting in death? And I saw Nevada, 2 to 25, got instantly pissed off, then kept reading and saw Oklahoma, 0 to 1. So then I texted you and said, hey, dude, if you're going to go get drunk and drive, go do it in Oklahoma.
Mm.
Unbelievable. Unbelievable. Yeah, going back to what you're saying about the Raiders, yeah. You know, honestly, it couldn't happen to a better franchise. Minus the Cowboys. But anyway, that's besides the point. Yeah.
So Ruggs is facing the DUI resulting in death and reckless driving charges. So the combined sentence that he could possibly carry is 46 years in prison. If he's proven guilty and receives the max sentence for both of those crimes, 46 years.
And I'm sure he's going to hire the best lawyers because he has the most money, and he's going to get maybe half of that at most.
Right.
Which is going to, it's terrible because, like I said, in my eyes, and I'm sure your eyes as well, he's a murderer. I mean,
yep.
Have you seen the video of him on a traffic cam driving down that same road or wherever? It's unbelievable.
Mm-hmm. I don't know if that's like the actual clip or anything. You know, you've seen like the video on TikTok or whatever. The video is you've seen it and it is jarring, but you don't know if that's the actual video.
Right. And then another video came out of him being at the golf course or whatever, and apparently he had taken somewhere upwards of 10 to 15 shots of alcohol or whatever.
Mm. Yeah, and you go back and you view, some people have gone back and found like his old tweets and things, and it really just like it sort of takes you aback. He's like, I'm a great driver, I'm this, I'm that, and it just sort of, you know, it's one of those situations where first and foremost, you feel so beyond horrible for the person, for the woman who was killed in this accident and her family. And but for, I guess for me, and not, I'm not sitting here trying to I guess you could say be understanding of his situation, because I'm not understanding how you could do something like this. But I do feel bad for Henry Ruggs in some shape, one way or another, that you know, this decision that he made cost a woman her life, and I'm sure that was not his intention. And he's going to have to live with that for the rest of his life. And it very well might have just ended his NFL career. The thing that he has been working towards and the thing that he has been scraping and clawing and bleeding and sweating for his entire life to get to this point, and one stupid, irresponsible, negligent decision has cost him excuse me, his livelihood and maybe even his reason for living, which is the game of football. So in that sense, I do have some empathy for him in that situation, but driving 150 plus miles an hour
on a city street,
twice the legal limit for
at
drinking
at 3:30 in the morning. You're telling me, well, actually, I'm also going to put some blame on those who was around him at the golf course, wherever.
Mm.
They were at Top Golf, or, you know, they were similar to where we have like big shots here. It's like Top Golf facilities. There's one in Kansas City, and I'm sure as hell there's one in Las Vegas. They have everything in Vegas, but anyway, that's besides the point. You mean to tell me that not one of his friends said, hey, dude, you've had enough, don't drive? Or, hey, you know, let me drive you home. Let me, you know, do this. And I'm not sure if you've seen it or not, but Derek Carr talked about this about a week ago.
Yeah.
And he said, you know, first off, he has, like, prayers for the family involved. Like I said, it killed a 23-year-old girl and her dog. A lie, by the way. That car, Ruggs rear-ended her at, like, 120, set the car on fire, and she burned alive. And I'm surprised that he didn't die as well, because, like I said, you know, you're going 120. Not a lot of people survive from that. But anyway, that's besides the point. He kept talking about, you know, what could I have done? You know, what could I have said? You know, should I have texted him saying, hey, I'm available for a ride. Hey, you know, you need me if you want to. I just still can't get over that fact. Like, I understand you're 22, and we get it because we're that age. You're 23, I'm 22. Ruggs was 22, or he still is 22.
Still is 22.
Yeah, he's not dead. Not yet, at least. But anyway, I would hope that I would have the common sense to not drink and drive, especially when I know I've had the amount of alcohol that I've had beforehand.
Right.
Now, but then again, a lot of different circumstances. You and I are, you know, kind of do-it-all producer engineers here at Zimmer Studios, and Ruggs is a professional athlete for the Las Vegas Raiders. He's making millions upon millions of dollars while we're making, you know, minimum wage or slightly above that. But you mean to tell me that kind of money and your just, I don't know, position in life makes you think you can do that? I can't
and
understand that.
It's one of those situations. I don't know if it's that necessarily. This is, you know, for a kid like Henry Ruggs, who, like you said, he's just 22 years old, you know, born and raised in Montgomery, Alabama, a kid that didn't come from a ton of money, a kid that came from a lower class environment and in situations where, you know, possibly, I'm not sure, I don't know the man's life.
Sure.
But in situations of growing up in lower class communities, you know, gang violence and drug violence can become a part of the norm. And you don't grow up with a lot of money, and all of a sudden you know you find this football thing and you have a ton of success in high school. You get to the University of Alabama, which is the pinnacle. It is the top of the top in college football, year in, year out. You're playing for Nick Saban, who in my opinion is the greatest coach in the history of college football. And you have a lot of success there. You're an All-American. You go out and you are the fastest player in college football. You go into the combine and run a 4.27, and all of a sudden you're a straight across the board consensus first round pick. You get drafted 12th overall by the Las Vegas Raiders, by Mark Davis, John Gruden, Mike Mayock, and you sign a $16 million deal. You went from possibly not having any money growing up, or very little money growing up, to being able to buy whatever you want, whenever you want, be able to do whatever you want, whenever you want. That is a ton of power. That is a ton of responsibility to put in the hands of a 21-year-old kid who has probably never had the opportunity to do anything he wanted, at least consistently, in his entire life. And you can make stupid decisions on that part. Due to that, you can make dumb decisions. And Henry Ruggs made a dumb decision, and he's going to pay for it. He absolutely is. Is he going to get the 46 years in prison? That's the maximum prison sentence for his two crimes? More than likely not. No. But how many people are in that situation? I don't know how many people at 22 years old, he's a guy, you know, and everybody's heard the story now about one of his friends growing up, Roderick Scott, who at 17 years old died in a car crash. And so, you know, every time Henry Ruggs scores a touchdown, he puts up that three, and that's a tribute to his friend that died when they were in high school. And, you know, Ruggs has been up to this point, and it's sad to see that this is the way it has to end, because he's been a pretty pristine member of the community. He has been working with this company called Three Square, which is a Southern Nevada food bank where they donate meals to people in need. And it became a really prominent thing with the COVID-19 pandemic. It became very, very important for him to do that. Last May, he had a daughter. And, you know, his daughter's 1 year old. And now she's, you know, facing the possibility of having to visit her father in prison for a considerable amount of time. So, yes, first and foremost, my thoughts are with this young woman. I say young woman, she was my age, and she's gone. You know, she's never going to get to experience being, you know, any of those things. She's not going to be able to experience getting older and being a mother and being a grandmother, any of those, you know, those scenarios, those things that we look forward to as we get older in life. That decision was taken away from her. And should Ruggs be punished for that? Yes, absolutely. But I have a hard time in any of these scenarios having to understand, you know, this man spending 46 years in prison and having his entire life completely upended for one very reckless, irresponsible decision. But it's tough to say that out loud, knowing that reckless, irresponsible, dumb decision cost a woman her life, and a decision that she never got the opportunity to have either.
Yeah. That's where I draw the line with. Look, I understand. Yes, it's a dumb decision. And Henry Ruggs has basically thrown away what all he has worked for. But the fact of the matter is, because of his decision, I like to call this the butterfly effect. Because of his decision to drink that night and to get in the car, double the limit, and go over 150 in a city limit, cost the life of someone that had no business being in a part of Henry Ruggs' life. And who knows? Maybe she was a Raider fan. Maybe Henry Ruggs was her favorite player. And yet, his decision to be, his idiotic decision, to be exact, yeah, it cost him what he's worked for in life, but in total it cost her
her life, right?
An innocent bystander, just sitting in her car at 3:30 in the morning. You know, I don't know, and maybe someone else does. Don't know the reasons why. She was out there at 3:30 in the morning. Maybe she had to go to work, working overnight. Maybe she was getting something on the way home. Had her dog with her.
Mm-hmm.
So maybe picking up from the vet clinic. I don't know. But because of Ruggs deciding to drink and drive, he has now lost a family daughter. Perhaps maybe a future wife, a future mother, a future grandmother. And that's where I have little to no sympathy for Henry Ruggs. But that's my last thoughts on it. Let's move on. More positive subject here. College basketball.
Yes, sir.
It begins tonight. I know Missouri State plays SEMO. Of course, we're based here in Springfield, Missouri, so they play Southeast Missouri State. Not Central Missouri, not the letter SEMO like I alluded to last week, but SEMO, S-E-M-O, here tonight at the JQH Arena. Tip-off at 7 p.m. And Logan, I know there's a lot of opening night matchups that are kind of meh. You know, I believe Iowa plays some slack Division 1A school or just some slack Division 2 school. But one of the marquee matchups tonight involves the Big 12 in Kansas versus Michigan State.
Yeah, Kansas, Michigan State. Michigan State's not ranked preseason top 25, which is a very rare occurrence under Tom Izzo. But Kansas looking right now ranked preseason number 3. State Farm Champions Classic game going on in Madison Square Garden. That game will tip off at 6 o'clock. It's going to be interesting to watch. It really is. What Michigan State is going to be able to do this season under Tom Izzo. They had a down year last year. I think there's no other way to put it with what happened last year with Michigan State. Tom Izzo, I'm sure, is going to try to get them back on track with that. And Kansas, you know, preseason ranked in the top 5, as they are pretty much year in, year out. They returned some great talent. They brought in some great talent. So, you know, you still got Okai Agbaji back. You got Christian Braun back. So we'll see, you know, some things that happen there. But they brought in some guys. They brought in Remy Martin from, I believe he was at Nevada and then Arizona State. Now at Kansas, he's a fill-it-up type of scorer. Jalen Wilson's back, who is a former 4-star, maybe even a 5-star guy. David McCormick. And then a guy that maybe some people in this area might be aware of, being Cam Martin. Cam Martin is from UConn, Oklahoma, who for the last 4 years has been playing at MOSO, Missouri Southern, Division II school. I had the opportunity to watch Cam play several times because he's involved in the MIAA, where my alma mater, Northwest, and MOSO had a great basketball program. Northwest has a great basketball program, so they would clash quite often. He'll be playing in his first game at Kansas, so there's going to be some interesting things to watch from this Kansas team. They've got a ton of talent. And then, like you said, some other games ongoing that are, you know, like Villanova playing Mount St. Mary's, Ohio State's playing Akron, which is an in-state matchup. That's always fun to watch, but Ohio State, preseason ranked 17, should control this game pretty much from the word go. But there's going to be some interesting matchups. I want to see what North Carolina is going to look like this year after they had a down year. Roy Williams is out. Brand new head coach coming back, starting
big
this season.
To fill, yeah.
Yes. So they're taking on Loyola of Maryland, not Loyola Chicago.
Yeah,
Loyola Maryland.
Yeah.
So will be interesting to see what that looks like. They should control that one. They're 24.5-point favorites.
Also, Duke going into their final year with Mike Krzyzewski, Coach K.
Yep, and they are the other big-time matchup, the only top 25 matchup we have to open up college basketball here tonight. They play Kentucky. That's the second game going on tonight in that State Farm Champions Classic at Madison Square Garden. Number 9, Duke. Number 10, Kentucky. Coach K versus Coach Calipari. Always a great matchup.
That's
two of the best
be on
in the
ESPN
game.
Somewhere, yeah.
Yeah, absolutely. Cool. It's going to be, yeah, it's on ESPN. It'll tip off shortly after the Kansas Michigan State game. But like you said, the final season, the last dance for Coach Mike Krzyzewski.
Can't wait to see a documentary about him in 20 years. Mike Krzyzewski.
Hopefully it doesn't take that long. But, you know, it's going to be fun to watch. You know, he's getting prepared for the farewell tour. And I'm sure they'll do something tonight at Madison Square Garden for Coach Krzyzewski because, you know, he is one of the greatest coaches
ever
in the history of college basketball.
of basketball in general ever.
I mean, I don't think there's much of an argument that can be made for that.
Man coached national teams, U.S. national teams, and involved, you know, NBAers being alongside one of the best coaches also ever in Greg Popovich. You know, coaching the likes of, you know, the Blue Bloods of Duke. Come on.
Dude's a legend. Yeah. It's going to be fun to watch. You know, he's been at Duke since 1980.
God, he's going into since I was born, yeah.
Yeah, he's going into his 41st, 42nd year at Duke. 5 national titles, 12 Final Fours, 15 ACC basketball tournament championships, 12 ACC regular season titles. I mean, one of the all-time greats.
And there's no pushovers in that ACC.
No.
It's, you know, I loved watching the battles of them between in the 2000s and the 2010s with North Carolina and Duke when they were both ranked, both in the ACC, at times matched up in the NCAA tournament. Oh, that was the best basketball to watch, dude. Oh, man.
Absolutely. And there's going to be those two games, first and foremost, are going to be really, really fun to watch. Yeah, and like you said, like Iowa's playing Longwood. Which I don't even know where Longwood is. No idea. Could not tell you.
I'll tell you here. Just keep
9 o'clock tip off. So gonna
Ooh,
be
that's
looking.
Late.
Yeah, the women's team plays beforehand, and the Iowa women's team. For those who are unaware, the Iowa women's team is
very good,
very very good,
like contending for a national championship type good.
Very very good, and like you said. Missouri State taking on Southeast Missouri State. Missouri State opens up their 16-point favorites tonight.
Wow, they got a line.
Yeah, at JQH Arena.
There you go.
Of course.
Mid-major getting a line from Vegas.
7 o'clock tip-off, so if you're looking forward to some college basketball, absolutely, hit up the JQH Arena tonight. I'm so confused by that. Like, when are they going to find a name?
It's going to be
because
coming here soon.
It's no longer JQH, right? Technically speaking. But yeah, that's still just what everybody refers to. ESPN still has it as JQH Arena.
Yeah, might as well. Right? I don't know if the name has actually changed or not. But looking at Iowa's opponent, they're the Longwood Lancers. They're a school based in Farmville, Virginia. When you have a team like Longwood, I'm sure it's some Farmville somewhere. They are Division I, though.
Mm.
They play in the Big South Conference, except for field hockey. They play in the Mid-America Conference for field hockey.
Okay.
Yeah. So there you go.
So the Iowa women's team is playing New Hampshire tonight. And that's also, that's at Carver Hawkeye Arena in Iowa City. That's a 6 o'clock tip-off. Iowa women's team, number 9 in the country. But we have another top 25 team.
That's also playing tonight.
Yeah.
In women's basketball.
Yeah. Several of them.
But one. Especially particular to this area, which we're, of course, based in Springfield, Missouri. The Missouri State Lady Bears. They open their season in Arkansas at Little Rock. Our boss, Tom Ladd, the voice of the Lady Bears, King Lady Bear himself. Tom Ladd's going to be calling that game from Little Rock. You ever do any games from Arkansas before?
Me?
Yeah.
No, I've never been to Arkansas.
I actually had an opportunity to do it this season. A athletic director from a...
That's mad disrespect. I assumed, as apparently you did as well, that Missouri State's women's team was preseason ranked in the top 25. They're not.
They're not. I know. It's insane.
Receiving votes, only 18
there.
Of them, but not ranked preseason top 25.
Which is weird because they made it to the
Sweet 16
last year and are going to be returning most of their starters from that.
Yeah, strange.
Here's the thing, dude. That's the bugaboo of being a mid-major. Like they're not
bugaboo. I like that.
They're not gonna like those AP writers, those NCAA guys that make the rankings. They're of course gonna, you know, actually I'm not gonna use that term because then the FCC would be crawling up against me. But they love to just glorify the Power Five schools, which makes it hard for a mid-major school to get any kind of ranking. Missouri State had to basically win every single game that they won to get to their ranking, and if they lost one, they'd immediately be out.
Yeah.
Of the top 25.
That's true.
Because they play in a mid-major, and they haven't had, quote-unquote, sustained success. Now, over the past 3 to 4 years, I'd say they've had pretty good success. But, you know, you're going to have to get to where the Gonzaga men's team is in order to get respect like that. You know how Gonzaga is. They're a mid-major, but their basketball program has just been nothing short of elite
right.
for the past almost decade now. So, I mean, if Missouri State can keep up with this, they'll get a ranking soon enough, and their schedule looks pretty good. They're going to play Oklahoma State. They're going to play at USC, Virginia Tech, LSU. They're playing a lot of good teams. They're going to play Mizzou later on.
At home.
At home. And then, of course, they're going to open up conference play. I'd love to see a Missouri State-Iowa matchup, in my opinion, but I'm sure
that'd be a good one. I think they played a few years back.
They
Missouri,
probably did.
Missouri State and Iowa did.
Yeah, but I mean, you know.
I'd love to see this Missouri State women's team take on that Iowa team with Caitlin Clark.
Yeah.
Who is, in my opinion, top two player in women's college basketball.
Only a sophomore.
Yeah. Along with Paige Buechers from Kentucky.
She
from
blew up
me.
As a freshman last year.
Yeah,
especially
Clark.
In that NCAA tournament.
Yeah, she's a stud. But, you know, if you don't want to wait until 6:30 tonight to watch some quality college basketball, why don't you turn on ESPN at 4 o'clock. Number one, South Carolina, taking on number five, NC State in women's basketball. A top five matchup on opening night in college hoops. Some good basketball on both sides, men's and women's,
okay,
to open up this year.
Now looking at the basketball schedule, I'm now jealous for now Tom Ladd. Because look at this. They're going to play in Little Rock, and they're going to go to North Texas, Oklahoma State. Okay, yeah, you know. It's in the area, whatever, you know.
Stillwater, right?
Yeah, Stillwater. Then they go to USC, which is in Los Angeles, California. Then they go to the San Juan Shootout. In Puerto Rico.
Puerto Rico.
Are you kidding me?
Go to the PR, baby.
Oh, my goodness. Thomas Ladd, please don't enjoy yourself too much because we little people here in Missouri, still have to reside in this great state of Missouri.
Tom, if you need a sideline reporter, just
give
me a call.
Oh, yeah. If you need a color commentator, me and Logan, we're your guys.
Just give us a call. We'll be there.
Exactly.
We'll be there.
But no, that is so cool. Virginia Tech and LSU in San Juan, Puerto Rico. That is awesome.
Yeah, some great, and that's sort of indicative of the respect that Missouri State basketball is getting.
Sure.
Women's basketball specifically is
getting. The men's are not far behind as well.
No, absolutely not. The coaches for both of these teams are doing such a good job. Coach Mox has this team, you know, teetering and merging towards the level that we've seen from Missouri State in the past. I'm not going to come out and say that like they're approaching Jackie Stiles' level of success or anything like that, going to Final Fours and things like that. But, you know, consistently a Sweet 16 team and recruiting very, very well at the same time. So I'm looking forward to seeing what both of these teams, the men's and women's team, are able to do this year, because the men's basketball team, as we're well aware, has two of the top five preseason all-conference selections.
Yeah, Gage Prim and Isaiah Mosley.
Both of those guys are preseason All-Missouri Valley first team. Both of those guys are preseason, they're on the watch list, the preseason watch list for the player of the year in mid-major basketball, I guess you could say, small college basketball. So it's going to be fun to watch. Both of these teams all year long is going to be fun, and both teams kick off tonight. Men's team at 7 o'clock. That will be on 101.3 Real Country. Yours truly will be the producer for that. Of course, we will have the ever so lovely Art Haynes on the call for that matchup. And then the women's game will kick off at 7:30 here on the Jock, all three stations. Our new hire, Mr. Evan Sappington, will be producing that game.
Wait, and you mean you can't produce two basketball games at once?
In two separate rooms? That's a little bit difficult.
Oh, come
to do.
On. Never, you know, no, I'm just being facetious. Yeah, I know it's impossible to do.
You know, it's been done. I could do it. It's just kind of hard to do when they're in two separate rooms that way.
I'm sure the volume will be at max in both studios.
I'm sure it will.
Sure.
I'm sure it will. Evan will be doing the broadcast for that one, producing it, I should say. And of course, our boss, our operations manager, Mr. Tom Ladd.
Hey,
voice of the Lady Bears.
You never know. 20 or 30 years from now, maybe we could,
maybe
get into that position, but
maybe
that's in the future. And we're in the now. We're in the present. Yeah, like I said, or like Logan said, Missouri State men's play SEMO. And then tonight for the women's, they play Little Rock. They'll play Arkansas. And looking at the men's schedule here as well, they go to Florida.
Going to Naples.
In 2 weeks, Naples, Florida. You been there?
I've been to Florida. I've never been to Naples.
Yeah, neither have I. But
no, I've been to Orlando.
I've been to Navarre Beach, and that was back when I was in spring break of 2006.
Mm.
Can't believe it's been that long. 15 years, my friend. 15 years.
been a while. 15 years. Last time I went to Florida was 2012.
Oh man, I love to go back to Florida.
Yeah,
sister used to live there.
14. Oh, that's nice.
Yeah, then she moved back here. Why I don't know, but you know.
Yeah,
maybe got a little homesick.
We went down there for a week, 8 days. Yeah, I don't know how long we were down there.
That's how long I was in Navarre Beach. It was during spring break of 2007, I think.
It was
2007 because it was first grade.
I want to go back so bad. I was a freshman in high school when I went. But I want to go back so bad because so we went down, right? And it was for, as anybody who listens to the podcast well aware, my sister and her brain tumor and then that situation there. Right. So like the following year, we got a Make-A-Wish trip. So that's where we went. She wanted to go to Florida. And we went to Florida. If you've ever heard of the movie or seen the movie Dolphin Tale.
I've heard of it, yeah. I've seen bits and pieces of it, but no, I have not seen
down,
the full movie.
Down in Clearwater, Florida is where the dolphin lives, or lived at the time. I don't know if the dolphin's still alive. I have no idea. But Reagan was obsessed with that movie. So we went down there and we saw that. We went to Disney World for a day. We went to Universal Studio for a day. Determined that Universal was way better than Disney World, and kept going back to Universal Studios. I'd like to go back there at some point because I liked the Harry Potter movies, but I wasn't nearly the fan of Harry Potter back then that I am now. Harry Potter World, the Wizarding World of Harry Potter that's there at Disney World in Florida was so cool, and I want to go back just so I can enjoy it even more than I did last time. But I mean, it was a really, really fun trip. Universal Studios was insane. Of course, back then, they had still had the rights to like some of the Marvel stuff. So they had like a bunch of Marvel rides and stuff. Like they had a Hulk ride, a Spider-Man ride, all this stuff. But they had a King Kong ride. They had a Twister, the movie Twister. They had a ride for that.
Great movie.
It was a lot of fun down there at Universal Studio. They had like this one ride that I will never forget as long as I live, where it was like this rock and roll ride. So you'd get on it and you had like a little touchscreen thing in front of you. There was like 12 or 16 songs that you could pick from. So you would pick a song and it would play in the speakers behind your head on the headrest, right? They had two speakers on either side that would play while you were going through the roller coaster. And let me just say, Stronger by Kanye West does not hit any harder than when you're going 60 miles an hour on a roller coaster. It was so much fun. And of course, like we were there for a Make-A-Wish trip, so we had fast passes and stuff. So like we would get done with the ride and we'd be like, we want to ride it again. So we'd go back through the fast pass line and we would ride the thing like 6 or 7 times in a row. And let me just say, people in line gave us some real nasty looks. People were upset with us, but we enjoyed it.
If you're going to get mad at someone for a Make-A-Wish ticket, then get the hell out.
Well, they didn't know. But like we had like, right, they gave us like free fast passes or whatever. Sure. So we just kept using our fast passes to get in front of these people. So we kept passing the same people like 4 or 5 times, getting back in line and riding the ride before them. So I could understand why they were upset. But like, you know, I was 14. I was a freshman in high school. My brother was 11 and was a 6th grader. And my sister was a 3rd grader. So, like, they didn't know. Right. She was a 4th grader, I should say. My brother was a 6th grader, yeah. Whatever it was. They didn't know, right? But it did seem like we were rubbing them the wrong way. But we didn't know any better. And they didn't know why we were there. But it was a lot of fun.
I haven't been, this is going to be sad to say, but I haven't been to an amusement park since my senior trip in 2018.
Yeah, I don't know the last time. I think maybe... maybe Silver Dollar City.
And it was a terrible experience because I was too, let's just say, I'll be blunt about it. I was too fat to be in the harnesses or whatever they put on you for the roller coasters. Mm. So I could ride one ride. It was Thunder Ration. But since then, I have not gone back. Because what's the point? Like, you can't go to an amusement park and not ride the roller coasters. You know, what's the point? But anyway.
I get sick. I can't do roller coasters
anymore.
I've
then lost 115 pounds since
then.
Yes,
you have. Yes, sir.
So I need to go back at some point. I'm actually closing in on 120 now. Last I weighed in was 248. I can't do it, man.
I can't do roller coasters. They make me sick.
Oh, roller coasters.
I used to ride them all the time. I was a big fan of roller coasters. I'm from Kansas City area, right? Worlds of Fun is up there in Kansas City.
Right.
So as a kid, right, you get to be like 8th grade, freshman in high school, and you get the season pass to Worlds of Fun, right, every year. So for like 3 or 4 consecutive years, I had a pass to Worlds of Fun. And so I would go, I mean, especially like 7th, 8th grade, freshman year, I probably went a combined 100 times to Worlds of Fun over those 3 years. And I just sort of, and I got to be like a junior or senior in high school, I just started to get like sick on roller coasters, just nauseous. So I can't do it anymore, which is unfortunate because my fiance is a big fan of roller coasters. So like when we go to Silver Dollar City, she wants to ride roller coasters. And I'm like, I'm going to throw up. I can't do it. I can't. And that probably comes from all those years of being in middle school and early in high school, you know, getting a freaking massive turkey leg and a funnel cake from the concessions areas, eating those and then being like, let's go ride the Patriots 6 times. And
good luck
spinning around and being upside down and all kinds of crazy business. You know what else is crazy business? The awards voting for Major League Baseball. This is the last thing I want to talk about before we get out of here today. Man, I didn't think I could be any more upset with Major League Baseball. I really didn't.
Before you get on your Royals tangent here, 5 St. Louis Cardinals won Gold Gloves. First time ever in Major League Baseball history that a team has won 5 Gold Gloves. Could have been 6 and probably should have been because Yadier Molina was a finalist, but Jacob Stallings of the Pittsburgh Pirates beat him out. But Paul Goldschmidt, Tommy Edman, Nolan Arenado, Tyler O'Neill, Harrison Bader. 5 Gold Gloves on the same team.
Royals got 2.
Could have had a chance at 4.
With Michael Taylor and Andrew Benintendi. The fact that Nicky Lopez didn't win a Gold Glove at
shortstop. He didn't even get nominated.
Is a travesty. That is absolutely abysmal by the voters and by the people that put these lists together. That's terrible. That he wasn't even a finalist for this award. That's terrible. That is what it is. That's not where my head is. Yeah, and Whit Merrifield, I think, could have won one as well. My head is with 2 separate things. Okay, first of all, Mike Schilt is a finalist for Manager of the Year in the National League.
Awkward. Yeah, I did see that. Yeah.
What?
Well, it's because he went on one of the longest winning streaks in history, the longest in Cardinal franchise history, and one of the longer ones we're going to see probably in our lifetime. So that's probably a reason why he did win 90 games and got them to a wild card game, considering the circumstances. But other than that, I got nothing for you. I don't know why he's there, but, you know, I'm not a baseball writer. I wish I was. I'd have a lot of things on my mind if I was a baseball writer.
100%.
I can barely read my own handwriting, nonetheless, write baseball articles. I can type them out. I can for sure type them out and at times tweet them out on my, you know, Motorola E5 or whatever. But anyway, but that's besides the point. What else you got? Oh, you're getting... You're moving up in your chair. I can see the smoke.
This is definitely something that should have gone on. This is something that should have been discussed on a Thursday, but I don't want to wait that long. Okay. Shohei Ohtani is going to be the MVP of the American League, is what it is. I understand that. Vladimir Guerrero is going to finish 2nd. Could not disagree with that at all.
Oh,
I agree.
I know where this
is going. How in the hell is Marcus Semien a finalist for the AL MVP and not Salvador Perez? Miss me with that. That's BS. I don't care that the Blue Jays had a better record. I do not care. No player in Major League Baseball had more home runs than Salvador Perez, and no player in Major League Baseball had more RBIs than Salvador Perez. He led Major League Baseball in 2 of the 3 Triple Crown categories, had more home runs than any catcher ever, and didn't make the freaking finalist for MVP? What are we talking about? Oh, I just... It's disrespectful, and I hate it. And everybody in the Midwest should hate it. Because that's exactly what this is. It's Midwest bias. It's crap.
Midwest disrespect.
Yes, that's exactly what it is. You know, you've got Marcus Semien, and you've got Vlad Jr. in Toronto towards the East Coast. Blah, 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 blah. You've got, you know, Shohei Ohtani in L.A. on the West Coast. But the best hitter in Major League Baseball this year is sitting in the middle of a small market in Kansas City, and he just gets ignored because the Royals didn't make the playoffs.
Well, in that sense, neither did the Blue Jays. Well, the Blue Jays did win more games. They won 90 games but didn't make the playoffs. Yeah, I didn't notice it until now, I glazed over this picture because, of course, the first two guys you see is, you know, first place winner Shohei Ohtani, second place winner Vladimir Guerrero Jr. And I just kind of glanced over, but Marcus Semien is third.
And so the home runs and the RBI should put him over the top anyway, in my opinion. Okay? But here's another thing that I think people are ignoring. So Salvador Perez played more than 75% of his games this season at catcher.
Right.
He DH'd some as well, yes. He played in 161 games. Despite, as we're all well aware, he dealt with several major injuries during the year. Still played in 161 of 162 possible games. I mean, and he had 620 at-bats, which was ninth most in Major League Baseball. He had 169 hits, which was 13th in Major League Baseball. He had a .273 batting average, which was the best of any catcher in Major League Baseball this season. He had, as I mentioned, 48 home runs, tied with Vlad Jr. for the most in Major League Baseball. Ohtani was third with 46, Semien fourth with 45. However, here's what frustrates me, okay? Here is where I am going to let loose. You put Marcus Semien ahead of Salvador Perez for the MVP voting, despite the fact that Marcus Semien had a lower batting average, less home runs, less RBIs. Salvi had a .273 batting average. Semien had a .265. Semien hit 45 home runs. For a shortstop, that's very impressive. Or second baseman, I should say. Very, very impressive. Salvi had 48. Salvador Perez hit 121 RBIs. 121. Semien had 102. And to top all of that off, Salvi's a great fielder. The guy's won 5 gold gloves. Probably shouldn't have been in consideration for a gold glove this year. I don't disagree. You know, did he win the gold glove this year? No. Is what it is.
Still in consideration, yeah.
Right. Still in consideration for a gold glove. You know, I just don't understand what in the hell these voters are looking at. He had a lower slugging percentage and a lower OPS as well. And Semien got the MVP finalist nod, not Salvador Perez.
You know what's sad? I'm looking at this post, and there are not that many people coming to the defense of Salvador Perez. They're calling him like one of the worst defensive catchers in baseball.
He was like seventh in Major League Baseball this year in defensive WAR. What are we talking about?
See, one of the guys actually just put this stat up. I need to find that tweet again. Yeah, here it is. So looking at this graph right here, you got Andrelton Simmons number one, obviously. Yadi second in catcher WAR, which somehow he didn't win, you know, gold glove, but whatever, that's besides the point. I'm not going to get pissed off about it because the Cardinals won 5 gold gloves in general. But anyway, that's besides the point. Kiermaier in third, Arenado in fourth, Lorenzo Cain, former Royal in fifth,
yep.
Brandon Crawford in sixth, and then Salvador Perez number seven. And looking at this was the top, actually, if you look at WAR, the top defensive catcher in baseball, or in American League Baseball. But he didn't win the gold glove.
All right, like the only argument you could make for Marcus Semien being ahead of Salvador Perez is that he had 4 more hits than Salvador Perez had. Okay? Yeah,
4
is what it is.
Cool.
4 more hits. He had more walks and less strikeouts, which gives him a higher on-base percentage. Salvi had a .316 on-base percentage. Semien had a .334. And he had a higher WAR. Simeon's WAR was a 7.1. But Semien played on a winning team. You know, that's the thing that really ushers me away from a WAR perspective. So, like, here are the top guys in Major League Baseball in WAR. Carlos Correa, number one. Houston, you went to the World Series. You had a great year.
Yeah.
You won 95+. Marcus Semien from Toronto, they won 90+. Vlad Jr., Toronto, won 90+. You know, Fernando Tatis, Trey Turner, Tyler O'Neill, Paul Goldschmidt, Austin Riley, Brandon Crawford.
All winning teams, except for San Diego in that essence.
Right. And like, there were some other guys. There's some other guys on there, like Jose Ramirez in Cleveland, Juan Soto. But Juan Soto was absurd this season. Juan Soto, 313 batting average, 29 home runs, 95 RBIs. He had a 465 on base percentage.
Thank you very much.
He walked 145 times and struck out 93.
That's impossible to do.
That's insanity.
That's impossible to do, especially in today's baseball. But most home runs by a second baseman ever in Gold Glove defense, not enough. Or someone asked why Simeon was a finalist, and some guy said, most in MLB history needs a Gold Glover by a second baseman. Well, Salvador Perez just did that for catcher, and he's a Gold Glover. So,
5-time Gold Glover.
Yeah. Should have gotten number 6, probably.
One of the best fielding catchers ever. But it's fine.
Like you said, dude, it's Midwest biased. Or I shouldn't say it's Midwest biased. It's lack of Midwest biased. It's biased towards the East Coast.
Right.
Or the West Coast, or teams that have won. Like, Salvador Perez, to be an MVP consideration, had to have batted 300. Hell, he probably would have had to have won Triple Crown in order to be in consideration. He still would have lost to Shohei Ohtani.
Right.
But the fact that he's not top three, I've said this for multiple times on this podcast, and I'm going to say it again. I'm going to keep saying it for as long as I live. Baseball writers are such a joke. The Jeff Passons of the world, the John Haymans, the Bob Nightingales, they make me sick. Make me sick to my stomach. Not as sick as you were, but just sick in general.
Yeah, so 94 strikeouts this season for Juan Soto. I'm just taken aback by this.
You're taking a deep dive into Juan Soto.
I am. 94 strikeouts this season for Juan Soto, in 151 games played. So, guys that had less strikeouts than him, that played in as many or more games, Isaiah Kiner-Falefa from the Rangers, had 90 strikeouts in 158 games. Jake Cronenworth, Jesus, I can't read today at all, from San Diego, had 90 strikeouts in 152 games. Jose Ramirez had 87 strikeouts in 152 games. So those are the only three guys that played in as many or more games than Juan Soto that had less strikeouts than him. But I do want to point out, not a single one of those guys had near as many walks. 146 walks for Juan Soto this season. 145. Let's see who was in second place for the most walks in Major League Baseball this season.
You know what the scary thing about Juan Soto is? He's like, what, 22, 23, probably younger than that, 21?
23, I think, might be. Let me just quickly pull up the bio. Yeah, 23.
He's 23 years old.
Just turned 23. October 25th, he turned 23.
Ladies and gentlemen, we have not yet seen the best of Juan Soto.
Yeah,
and he's putting up these kind of numbers.
145 walks this season. You want to know who was in second? Joey Gallo with 111. But Joey Gallo also struck out more than anybody in Major League Baseball with 213 Ks.
I was going to say it had to be above 200, but 213. Oh, my God. If you're a pitcher and you get to 200 strikeouts, that's impressive. But if you're a hitter
and you
get to 200 strikeouts,
God. Yeah, Joey Gallo struck out 100 more times than he walked. Meanwhile, Juan Soto walked 60 more times than he struck out. 60 more times.
Joey Gallo is literally what Major League Baseball wants right now. He is the prototypical Major League Baseball player.
Yeah, he hit one.
Three true outcomes.
Batted 199 this season with 38 home runs.
Yeah, exactly. Three true outcomes. Yeah. Walk, home run, strikeout.
That's literally it.
That is Joey Gallo in Major League Baseball into
surprisingly,
one person.
He had a 351 on base percentage.
Well, yeah, because he walked over 100 times.
Yeah.
If he struck out 200 times and walked, say, like 50, 60 times, it'd be in the gutters. It'd be in the sewage. It'd be in the underworld. I like Joey Gallo.
So there were only 14 players in Major League Baseball this season that walked 80 or more times.
Soto was one of them, yeah.
The other, yeah, well, yeah, 14 guys. Only two guys of that 14 walked more than they struck out. Juan Soto and Yasmani Grandal of the White Sox, who had 87 walks and 82 strikeouts.
And like I said, that's impossible to do in today's baseball because it's just You know, tee it high, let it fly. Swing up and you'll be trotting, like, what's the word? Or what's the phrase? Elevate and celebrate. That's what it is.
Yep.
Guys just taking upward hacks, swinging at 0-2, just not afraid to strike out, i.e. Joey Gallo. That's hard to do, to walk more than you strike out.
I.e. Shohei Ohtani.
Yeah, i.e. Shohei.
Who had 96 walks this season, but had 189 strikeouts.
Sheesh.
Betted 257 with 46 home runs, 100 RBIs.
Yeah, good numbers, and he also pitched, which is the reason why he'll be Bingo. The MVP. If he just did that, then probably Vlad would win the MVP. Actually, if Shohei did just that for hitting-wise, I think he'd be behind Salvador Perez. But you can't say that because Salvador Perez wasn't a top three candidate.
Right.
Salvador Perez. Unbelievable. Unbelievable. Shame. Really, just shame on the baseball writers for not having a catcher who hit over 40 home runs, drove in over 100, while playing catcher 75% of the time.
Who led Major League Baseball in home runs.
Did not play in one game. Or, let me rephrase that. Played in 161 games. He didn't play in one game all season. Played 161 games, DHing or playing catcher. Put up those kind of numbers, and he doesn't get it any kind of MVP consideration. He'll probably get either fourth or fifth, but he should have been top three at least. Minimum.
He led Major League Baseball in home runs for the first time by a catcher since Johnny Bench in 1970. He also led Major League Baseball in RBIs.
How would you want to guess how many of these baseball writers were around in 1970?
I don't know.
My point. My exact point.
Very few?
Yeah, exactly. Very few. Very, very few. Whew. You're getting me heated about this, and I'm a meh Royals fan. I'll go to their games. I'll give them support whenever they're winning and just kind of bash them when they're losing. But, yeah. Salvador Perez not being in the top three is a disgrace.
100%.
Total disgrace. All right. What hasn't been a disgrace is this podcast, even though we've been idle for the past now 3 or 4 days. I feel like this thing is more or less, it's more scheduled for us to miss podcasts than to record them. But, hey, that's life. More adults.
It is what it is.
It is what it is. But, all in all, I've had fun, as always. And who knows? Maybe one day this will turn into a radio show. Maybe some foreshadowing there. May just be. All right, Logan, I think we've exhausted our time. We are now north of the 1 hour mark here on this recording, so I think it's about time we wrap this one up and put a bow on it, because we are in that kind of season, even though I hate it. It's not Christmas season, everybody. We have to wait till after Thanksgiving.
Disagree.
And then we can move on to the Christmas.
Disagree. I'm buying a Christmas tree this week.
Another one? Or do you not have one before?
Don't have one yet.
Okay.
No. I'm not going to put it up yet.
Okay.
So that's a tradition within my family. Black Friday. What we used to do when I was a kid, we would go buy a real tree.
Ooh.
We would go to a tree farm and we would cut down a real tree. And we would put that up on Black Friday. That sort of evening, right? Black Friday evening, and we would, you know, put on Christmas movies or whatever, and we would watch Christmas movies. But if you want to start celebrating Christmas, you want to get after it, then go ahead and get after it. Don't let this man tell you otherwise.
It's just like, why are we jumping the gun? Like, it'll be here.
You know what? I was ready for Christmas mid-October because I hate Halloween.
Well, you're in the minority there, my friend. I'll say that.
I understand. It's my least favorite holiday. I cannot stand Halloween. But I feel like if you want to start celebrating Christmas, celebrate. Listen to your music. You know, bust out the Mariah Carey. Bust out the Michael Bublé. The Bing Crosby. The Frank Sinatra.
God. And those are good artists. I'm not dishing them, but I just like, ugh. If I have to hear All I Want for Christmas one more time.
Bust out the Pentatonix. Do it. All right? Go for it.
You know, I'd mess with Pentatonix. I'm fine with that.
And my Spotify is aware. You know, I'll be driving, and I'll be skipping songs, and like every third or fourth song is a Christmas song on my Spotify. And I'm like, yeah, this is nice. I like this.
So you know? you're weird with your Spotify, though, because you don't delete songs. I do.
I do not, no.
I get tired of songs.
What did I say last time? I feel like I've come out on the podcast and said like how many like songs I have. It's a ridiculous number. Yeah,
it's almost 4, 000, a million hours. Yeah,
4,841 songs.
Yeah, no, mine's 116. Like I can't. Like if I get tired of a song, I'll just unlike it and then I'll come back to it like 6 months later and be like, oh yeah, this you know what's banging. I'm gonna like it again, and you know it comes back and you know we redo the cycle. But no, I can't listen. I just can't skip a song for like a long period of time and then just be like, ah, forget about it. You know, meh.
That's so if the average song is 3 minutes long, right? I just did the math here. So each song is an average of 3 minutes.
Okay.
So 180 seconds. 180 seconds times 4,741 songs. That is 871,380 seconds worth of songs. So if I divide that by 60, which equates to one single minute, that is 14,523 minutes worth of songs.
So divide that by 60 and you get however many hours you want, which will just now suffice to any road trip you're going to go
242
on.
Hours.
Good God. You could travel to China and back in a car with that kind of playlist.
Sheesh. That's 10 days worth of songs.
Exactly. My point. You could drive to the coast of North Carolina. Or actually, no, you need to go the other way. You need to go the other way. I got a B in geography class. My problem. You need to go out west to Los Angeles, then get on a boat, and then, you know, float, take a ship to China, and by then, your songs would just then be finished. I can't believe I almost botched that. Thankfully, I corrected myself. But I guess you could go east. You just have to go through Europe.
Actually, from Springfield, Missouri to Los Angeles is 24 hours.
Okay. So you could.
That's a day. You could get a day's worth of music. You still have 9 days worth of music.
Oh my God.
That's ridiculous.
Yeah. You'll never. With that being said, you'll never see me driving from here to Los Angeles. Hell, you'll never see me in Los Angeles unless you know I'm Tom Ladd and I'm doing a game for Missouri State Lady Bears against USC. But, you know, that's a few weeks away for him and, well, a few years, hopefully, for me. Yeah, a lot more than a few. All right. I've made my peace about Christmas and your just incredible amount of music that you have saved on your like songs. I wonder, before we go, I got to see how much I have just in comparison to yours. I think mine is like in the range of 114 to 115 songs for my liked playlist. And we're talking about your liked playlist, right? Just the songs you liked on Spotify. We're talking about like the songs that you have liked on Spotify.
Yeah.
They just keep on your liked songs. So I'm trying to find mine too. Do you have an iPhone or do you have an Android?
iPhone.
Okay. Like, see, I buy Androids because I don't want to pay an arm and a leg for an iPhone, but whenever it takes forever to load any kind of app, it does get kind of infuriating. I have 118 songs on my playlist. Whew. And you have upwards of 1,000. So there's a lot of differences between us two, and, well, there's one major one right there. But we put our differences aside for the most part. And we do the Rookie Sport podcast, which we're out of time of here on this Tuesday edition. Appreciate all those who have listened, whether it be on Apple iTunes podcast or Spotify, or even if you followed our post futuri link on the ESPN Jock and Twitter pages. However you have listened, we have appreciated that you have listened. Logan, always a pleasure. We'll do it again, hopefully, fingers crossed. Cross the T's, dot the I's tomorrow.
Yes, we will.
For Logan Weber, I'm Matthew Rizzo. This has been the Tuesday edition of the Rookie Sports Report Podcast. Hey, listen, don't let anyone tell you the odds. I'll talk to you tomorrow.
Dogs are better than cats.